When we hear the word dehumanization, our minds leap to the dramatic war, genocides, atrocities that scar history. But dehumanization does not live only in extremes. It lives in the small, ordinary gestures of daily life. The ones so common, we barely notice them. The ones we excuse as harmless, efficient, even necessary. These are not footnotes to the larger story. They are the roots from which it grows. Think of the way we talk about work. Employees become resources. Departments become headcount. Workers become assets or liabilities. On the balance sheet, people dissolve into numbers. It feels professional, rational, even unavoidable. But in the translation from person to unit, something essential is lost. Or consider schools. Children are ranked by test scores, compared by averages, sorted into categories. The student struggling with grief or hunger becomes underperforming. The child with curiosity but no discipline becomes a problem case. When education reduces students to results, it risks forgetting the person behind the grade. And when enough forget, the system no longer teaches, it sorts. Healthcare too can slip into this logic. The patient becomes a bed. The mother becomes a case. The elderly man with no visitors becomes a discharge to be arranged. Medical staff may not intend cruelty. Often, they're overwhelmed, exhausted, bound by procedure. But the language still reshapes the patient into a task to be managed rather than a person to be cared for. On the streets, we do it without thinking. The homeless man becomes a nuisance. The woman asking for help becomes a scammer. The stranger walking too slowly becomes an obstacle. In each case, we reduce the whole of a person's life into a single inconvenience to our own. And by doing so, we deny ourselves the chance to see them as fully human. The digital world accelerates this process. Online, people are avatars, usernames, profile pictures. We scroll past their pain, laugh at their missteps, rage at their opinions. Anonymity makes it easier to reduce others to caricatures. And when we do, cruelty feels less personal, more like entertainment. We tell ourselves it doesn't matter, it's just online. But the erosion of empathy online always leaks into the offline world. Even language we use casually carries this weight. We call people idiots, losers, worthless. We speak of entire groups as lazy, dangerous, backward. These words may not feel violent in the moment, but they accumulate. Each one chips away at dignity. Each one rehearses the logic that makes larger harms possible. Everyday dehumanization thrives in impatience. The customer snaps at the cashier who moves too slowly. The driver curses the cyclist who wobbles into their lane. The boss ignores the anxiety of the employee, demanding productivity above all. These moments are not acts of hatred. They are acts of forgetting, forgetting that the person in front of us has a whole life beyond the sliver we see. Forgetting is a form of dehumanization. When we treat someone only as the role they play in our story, we erase their fullness. The barista becomes my coffee. The delivery driver becomes my package. The nurse becomes my service. Their identities collapse into the function they perform for us. And once someone is only a function, empathy is optional. Notice how often efficiency is the justification. We don't have time to see the cashier as a person. We just need our groceries bagged. We don't have time to learn the story of the refugee. We just need the border managed. Efficiency makes empathy feel like an inconvenience. But a society that chooses efficiency over humanity chooses a dangerous trade: speed in exchange for compassion. Social media has made this trait even starker. The algorithm doesn't reward empathy, it rewards reaction. The quickest way to get attention is not to see others deeply, but to flatten them, to mock, to dismiss, to caricature. And the more we reward the flattening, with likes and shares, the more normal it becomes. Dehumanization doesn't just happen online, it is engineered there. Yet, everyday dehumanization rarely feels malicious. That is why it is so dangerous. When we think of cruelty, we expect malice. But most cruelty comes from neglect, impatience, or distraction. From people too busy to care, too tired to notice, too accustomed to reducing others into roles. We don't mean harm, but harm doesn't require intention. These small acts matter because they build culture. A workplace that ignores the voices of its employees becomes a culture of silence. A school that reduces students to scores becomes a culture of sorting. A society that treats refugees as numbers becomes a culture of exclusion. The habits of everyday life don't just mirror the larger structures, they create them. And once created, they are difficult to undo. Because everyday dehumanization feels normal, challenging it feels disruptive. The person who insists on slowing down, on listening, on calling someone by name, they feel out of step. But without those small disruptions, the larger pattern continues unbroken. Silence protects it, interruption challenges it. So the question is not only how we resist atrocities, it is how we resist the smaller habits that make them imaginable in the first place. Because if we cannot protect humanity in the daily, ordinary, unremarkable moments, we will never be ready to protect it in the moments when everything is at stake. The front line of dehumanization is not always at the border or the battlefield. It is in the classroom, the office, the checkout line. Think about how gossip works. A colleague becomes lazy. A neighbor becomes strange. A friend becomes unreliable. These words travel faster than the truth. Soon, the person is not seen as who they are, but as the story told about them. Reputation replaces reality, and once the story is fixed, the person has little chance of escaping it. Dehumanization also thrives in competition. When success is framed as scarce, every other person becomes a rival. The coworker is not a collaborator, but a threat. The student is not a peer, but a benchmark. The stranger is not neutral, but an obstacle to your own progress. In this logic, people become less like partners in a shared world and more like pieces on a board to be moved, outplayed, or removed. Consumer culture amplifies this even further. We are trained to see ourselves as customers first, people second, and everyone we interact with becomes part of the transaction. The waiter is good if the service is fast, bad if it is slow. The store clerk is good if they smile, bad if they don't. The humanity of the other is collapsed into the value they deliver to us. Social hierarchies reinforce the same patterns. Race, class, gender, nationality, all become shorthand for what is someone worth. Sometimes the bias is blunt, sometimes it is subtle, but it is always there. The accent that makes someone less professional, the skin color that makes someone suspicious, the clothing that makes someone untrustworthy. Each assumption may feel small, but each one chips away at personhood. Even in our closest relationships, dehumanization can creep in. When we treat partners as support systems rather than people with needs of their own. When we expect children to perform rather than to grow. When we dismiss parents as burdens rather than recognize their fragility. Love does not protect us from dehumanization unless it is conscious, deliberate, and practiced. Notice how rarely we pause to ask, what story am I telling about this person in front of me? Do I see them as an obstacle, a tool, a role? Or do I see them as someone as complex as myself? The answer changes how we act, because the way we imagine others is the blueprint for how we treat them. The danger is that everyday dehumanization feels so normal, we stop naming it at all. We call it business, we call it competition, we call it policy, we call it standards. The more neutral the label, the less we notice the harm beneath it. And unnoticed harm is harm allowed to spread. This normalization is what links the ordinary to the extraordinary. No genocide begins with machetes. It begins with metaphors. No atrocity begins with soldiers. It begins with systems. The everyday patterns lay the foundation, making the extreme possible. The extraordinary is only the ordinary multiplied. But the mirror cuts both ways. If everyday acts can erode humanity, everyday acts can also restore it. A name remembered. A story listened to, a kindness offered without calculation. These gestures are small, but they push back against the reduction of others to roles or categories. They keep the possibility of empathy alive. The truth is, most of us will never stand at the center of history. We will never command armies or write policies that shape millions. But all of us shape the small worlds we inhabit. Workplaces, families, neighborhoods, classrooms. And in those worlds, the way we see others matters, because it either rehearses cruelty or rehearses compassion. The line between those rehearsals is thinner than we think. A moment of impatience can humiliate. A moment of recognition can dignify. Neither act changes the world by itself. But together, multiplied across millions of small choices, they tilt entire cultures toward harm or toward care. This is why dismissing small acts as just words or just habits is so dangerous. Nothing is just. Each action is a seed. And seeds grow into systems, into norms, into cultures. The smallest permission we grant to ourselves can one day return to us magnified. To see this clearly is uncomfortable, because it means admitting our own participation, not in atrocities perhaps, but in the smaller erosions that make empathy optional. It is easier to point at villains in history than to notice how often we reduce others in our daily lives. But honesty requires us to face this truth, because only by facing it can we begin to change it. And change begins with attention, noticing when we flatten others into roles, noticing when we repeat words that reduce, noticing when we look away instead of looking closer. These moments of attention are where the work of rehumanization begins. The work does not start in the halls of power. It starts in the habits of perception. So as we leave this segment, remember, dehumanization is not only something history teaches us, it is something we practice, often without realizing. But if cruelty is rehearsed in the everyday, so is compassion. The small acts matter, because they are never just small. They are the rehearsal for what we allow tomorrow.